and I'm up early so I can get some painting done before I open the shop, I explain. Wow, you paint? Cool. Well, let's get you fixed up, he said, turning to the coffee machine. A large coffee with a quad shot, please. He raised both eyebrows, but made the drink without comment.
Bagel?
Yeah, sure. I started to say which, but he was already grabbing for an everything and the chive cream cheese.
Sorry, same as yesterday?
I nodded, and Christopher talked as he prepped my bagel.
A lot of people always get the same thing, and they really like it when you remember. It makes them feel special, seen, you know. I like knowing what people want.
He put the bagel together with the graceful movements of a familiar task.
But other people like lots of different stuff, and they don't repeat their order, so I like to make sure.
Well, I very occasionally deviate and go for a cinnamon raisin bagel with plain cream cheese if I'm feeling the need to try and recapture my lost childhood around the holidays, but I promise to give fair warning if it's one of those days, because the raisin bagel is the least of my issues on a day like that. He broke into a smile. Then he put my coffee on the counter between us and held up the bagel for a long moment, watching me assessingly. Instead of putting it in a bag, he put it on a plate with a napkin. He raised his eyebrows over eyes sparkling with mischief and bit his lip like he was waiting to see if I'd call his bluff. He looked like a kid reaching for a second cookie when he'd been told he could have one. Warmth bloomed to my chest at the idea that he was actively angling to have me stay here and talk with him as I ate. Wow, you're not subtle, huh? I said.
Nope.
His peeve popped, and his grin was sunny and boyish, wrinkling the skin around his eyes. And I found that I liked his lack of subtlety, that he was clear about wanting me to stay. I narrowed my eyes at him, just in case he was joking, but I left the bagel where it was. I shrugged out of my jacket and draped it over the stool, then I sat down across the counter from him. He squeezed his hands into fists and grinned.
Yay,
he said softly, and I felt another trickle of warmth flow through me that had nothing to do with the coffee. A book on the lost history of the Philadelphia Wharves lay on the prep counter, dusted with espresso. Christopher brushed it off carefully and then rested his elbows on it so he was closer to my height. I took a sip of coffee to avoid getting lost in the magnetic blue and rust of his eyes. Oh, shit, that's so much better than melted ice cream.
What?
Nothing. Christopher shot me a wry look, then went to help a customer. He asked her how her morning was going so far and really listened to the answer. A couple came in and called him by name, thanking him for helping them, but didn't say with what.
I live to serve, he said with a wink at them.
A few other customers came in, and I ate my bagel as he made polite conversation with mother and daughter tourists, pointing them toward the Liberty Bell and laughing when the mother made the joke about it being broken that everyone who lives in Philly has heard 1,000 times before. Shit, he was nice. Not faking it to get a good tip nice, not gritting my teeth and secretly plotting your death nice, but for real nice. Appreciates the human animal. Nice.
If you have a regular coffee maker at home, when it's functional, I mean, how much coffee do you have to drink to get the same effects as a large with a quad shot?
He said when he'd finished serving the last customer.
I don't know, I just drink it until it's gone?
I mostly only end up at coffee shops in the morning when I do silly things like break my coffee pot. I shouldn't order the quad shot. It's stupid expensive. Especially since it was money that could be going toward buying the shop. For a second, I thought I'd offended him, but Christopher just nodded, and I relaxed. My friend Daniel just moved to this wackadoo small town in northern Michigan, and he's losing his mind because everyone there is out of a David Lynch movie or something. So I guess there's a coffee shop there? Yeah, one. And Daniel would always order the same thing, a triple shot and a large coffee. And the lady who runs the shop kept giving him crap about drinking so much caffeine, yada, yada, yada. And then he goes in there the other morning. Daniel can't even make coffee without burning it, so he's seriously there all the time. And this lady had named the drink after him. Like, on the board, it said the Daniel, only the way she wrote it, it was espresso.
Christopher quirked a grin. He'd probably heard it ordered that way 100 times. Whatever, I'm not winning any spelling bees myself. But he's an English professor, so in his head, he's like, it's a totally different prefix. Anyway, he was mortified because he hates anyone drawing attention to him in any way, but I told him I was going to start going around ordering the Daniel at random coffee shops in Philly and then looking at people like they were from another planet when they didn't know what I meant. Christopher smiled as he wiped down the countertop. If you'd ordered the Daniel here, I'd have just made you some concoction as if it were totally a thing. I raised my hand and he high-fived me. No offense to your friend, but 3 shots? I know. It's vintage, Daniel. The first time he ordered it, he was super distracted, and the barista was like, we pulled double shots, so I'll just have to dump this 4th shot unless you want me to throw it in. And Daniel was so delighted that he got a free 4th shot that he just started ordering 3. Half the time, people would give him the 4th anyway. But you don't do that, too. I shrugged and slowly looked him up and down. I ask for what I want. Christopher gulped audibly and dropped the bar rag, pupils widening. The counter was between us, and suddenly we were both leaning into it, as if the desire to feel each other's heat could make it disappear. Then the tinkle of the bell ushered customers in, and the spell was broken. Somehow, the next day, I still hadn't replaced my coffee pot. And I found myself back again, chatting with Christopher over coffee and a bagel. So, you work at small change, right? Why, however could you tell? I looked down at my fully inked up arms and hands. I might have seen you around. He flushed slightly. Then he gestured to my tattoos. But, nah, you could just as easily work at Whole Foods. Well, I sure as hell can't afford to shop there. Yeah, I work at small change. I own it, actually. Rock on, small business owners, he said, and a Tom Waits fan to boot, assuming you named the shop. I nodded and held my hand up for another high five, but this time he didn't move away right after, instead curling his fingers around mine. My heart sped up a little, but I didn't pull my hand away. Your art is beautiful, he said, looking down at my forearm. It was one of my favorites, a detailed black and gray seahorse, its spiny body curled underwater. Jonathan had done it, and he had a way of making the translucent look solid, and the solid translucent like no other artist I'd ever seen. I still didn't know how he did it, but the water looked real enough to touch, and the bones of the seahorse delicate and membranous. Thanks. Do you have any? He shook his head, still looking at my arm. His gaze gave me goosebumps, raising the hairs not only on my arms, but at the back of my neck. Like my body was imagining what it might be like to feel his breath there. How'd you get into tattooing? As a kid, I drew constantly. I copied the characters on cereal boxes, drew portraits of my classmates, doodled in the margins of, well, everything. Freshman year of high school, I was in art class, and this guy, this senior, had a little tattoo on his arm. I saw it when he pushed up his sleeve to wash his hands. It was this crude little star, probably supposed to be a pentagram, but it was kind of fucked up. I asked him where he got it, and he said he just used a safety pin and the ink from a ballpoint pen. Christ, that doesn't sound sanitary. I grinned at him. Definitely not. So, of course, I tried it that night. No way. Do you still have it? I pulled up the other sleeve of my t-shirt and pointed to my upper left arm, where just visible in between the paws of a wolf and above the crown of a pine cone was a small, wavery tattoo, faded with time. Oh, that's... what is that? Did you ever read Sideways Stories from Wayside School? He shook his head. It's brilliant, for real. It's about this bonkers elementary school, super absurdist and hilarious. Anyway, one of the kid's dads lets him get a tattoo. The kid's like 10 or something, and he's all excited because his classmates are jealous and they think it makes him cool and hardcore, but he won't tell anyone what he's going to get because he can't decide. He agonizes over it. Then the next day, when he comes in, everyone gathers around him to see the big reveal. Christopher leaned in toward me, eyes wide. And what do you get? I tap my arm. A potato. Christopher burst out laughing. He had a fantastic laugh, loud and rich and from the belly, and it terminated in a kind of chuckle like it wasn't quite ready to stop yet. It was the kind of laugh that made you feel lucky that she said something he thought was funny. Oh, man. He wiped his eyes with his sleeve. That's the cutest thing I've ever heard. He waited on a customer, still chuckling when he glanced over at me. See, that's something I've always wondered about, he said, picking the conversation right back up. So many people with lots of tattoos seem to have stuff like that. That's just a joke or whatever. Doesn't it feel kind of serious, putting something on your skin forever? Or once you have so many, does it not matter anymore? But that's the thing. It isn't a joke. The potato. I mean, yeah, I know what you mean. Lots of tattoo artists and folks who are heavily inked don't care so specifically about each individual piece. It stops being about each tattoo as a work of art and starts being about an approach to life where you carry your history with you. You wear it. It's visible for the world to see, but more importantly, so you can't forget any of it. So yeah, you might get a tattoo from a friend to commemorate an event and not care so much what it looks like, as you do that every time you see it, you'll remember the moment you shared. And the more you have, the more possible that is, because they blend together into just you. Your past made present on your body. Christopher's eyes scanned my visible ink like he was trying to read that past. My arms, my hands. When he lingered on my neck, my breath hitched. It confronts you with yourself, with the things you've thought, felt, done. You can't pretend something didn't happen if it's on your skin. You can't forget. And they're also a way to retell the story, I guess. You know, like if something bad happens, a lot of people get a tattoo. Not because they want to remember the bad thing, but because once they've lived through it or figured it out, then every time they look at the tattoo, they remember that process. Tattoos are the scars you can choose. He was staring at me intently. Then he cleared his throat. No, that makes sense. I never thought of it like that. So the potato, why isn't it a joke? Oh, well, I mean, not to sound all lit professor about it, but it's a metaphor, right? In the book, I mean, it takes the expectations that people have of what a tattoo means and the expectations that people have of what a potato is and combines them. It crosses them? I don't know. I was sure Daniel would know some fancy literary term for what I meant. People think of potatoes as boring and blah and safe and totally unaesthetic. And they think of tattoos as flashy and dangerous and badass and artistic. So a tattoo of a potato, it frustrates both expectations, you know? Or maybe it highlights both. Either way, it kind of manages to make a tattoo blah and boring and safe and make a potato flashy and dangerous and badass. I shrugged. The doubled absurdity of sitting here giving a thesis on a potato caught up with me, so I took a sip of my coffee to stall. Christopher looked very serious, though. His eyebrows drew together, and he bit his lip as he reached out and touched my arm, covering the potato with the pad of one finger. "That's really damned beautiful, actually," he said. "Christopher, help me with these, sweetie," called a voice from the door. Neither of us had even noticed the tinkling bells. Christopher's eyes widened for a moment, then he shook his head in amusement. I could feel the ghost of his touch on my skin, like his finger had left a print on me, even after he'd turned away. In the doorway stood a tall woman in her late 50s or early 60s. Her gray-shot brown hair was windblown, and her cheeks were flushed. Two canvas grocery bags hanging off her wrists pulled her shapeless coat askew, and she was juggling a bakery box and the largest Tupperware I'd ever seen in my life. "Whoa, my, got it," he said, taking everything from her in one easy movement. "Just put it there," she said, pointing to the counter, and she walked right over and began pulling things out of the bags, a baguette and a round of cheese and some grapes. She popped the lid off the Tupperware, and the smell of spicy, briny tomatoes filled the air of melt. Ma, no, not here. What's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong is that this is a sandwich shop, and you can't start plating up puttanesca, or people are going to want to eat puttanesca instead of sandwiches.
Chris, it's just leftovers. It's not a big deal.
Christopher ran a hand over his face, and I got the distinct sense that this wasn't the first time a similar scenario had played out. You don't have to bring me lunch. I make food here, remember? He gestured to the deli meats, cheeses, and vegetables around the shop.
Just give me a kiss, shut your mouth, and eat the puttanesca.
She tapped her cheek, and Christopher leaned in to kiss her.
Thanks, Ma.
Maybe your friend would like some anyway, she said, looking me up and down. Then she was out the door as fast as she'd come in.
Oh, my God, I breathed.
That was my mom.
Yep. Yeah, I got that. He loaded the groceries back into the bag and put it behind the counter.
Do you want some, though? I know it's only 10 a.m., but it's kind of the one thing my mom makes well.
It smells amazing, but I have to go. Gotta open the shop in a few. He nodded.
Right, sure.
What about later?
We could meet up for dinner.
For a moment, I wondered what it would be like if I had a normal schedule and, like, was the person who had ever eaten pasta prepared by someone's mother. Oh, well, the shop stays open late, I said, flustered. Past dinner late, you know.
Sure,
he said, and I couldn't help but wonder if I was imagining that he sounded disappointed.
Bye, Ginger.
Hours later, in a break between clients, when my stomach was rumbling and I was thinking about how good some pasta puttanesca would taste, I said to Morgan, "Riddle me this, Batman. Exactly how many times can you awkwardly run away from someone before they come to their senses and stop wanting to see you?" Morgan raised one shapely eyebrow, but didn't ask for details.
"Depends on who you're running away from, I guess," she said. "And whether you want to get caught. Hell, that Cinderella bitch's sisters cut off their own heels."
And with that, she was off on a tear about fairy tales, and I found myself wondering if that pasta would taste as good as it had smelled.
Christopher. Jay. You never could resist a romance, huh? Works every time, winky face.
Or maybe you finally got so bored in there that confessions of my pathetic love life seemed like a good time. Either way, it's good to hear from you.
Thanks for writing back. Okay, as promised, her name's Ginger, and she owns a tattoo shop down the street from Melt. When I first met her, she was swearing a blue streak because she dropped a bagel, and I thought she was going to murder Stevie. Did I tell you I got him working the counter? Yes, she's covered in tattoos, and yes, I think it's super hot. Also the swearing. I don't know why. Shut up. She's gorgeous, man. This wild, curly black hair that's shaved on one side, so depending on which way she's turned, she looks like two different people. Big brown eyes that always look like she's wearing last night's makeup, but I don't think she is. Super intense. When she's listening, it sometimes looks like she's frowning, but I think she's just paying attention. And she's kind of short, but her body language is like she's 6 feet tall. Commanding. She'll stand there with her hands on her hips and her elbows out, and even though she's little, it's like there's a bubble around her that no one will disturb. Like one of those scratchy cats that lies right in the middle of the bed and lets you pet it sometimes, but glares if you try to move it one inch. She's just extremely there. You know what I mean? More vivid than anything else in the room. Kind of like how you describe when you're playing, maybe. Like it's just you and the music and everything else is blocked out and then it's over and the rest of the world comes rushing back in. I think you'd like her. She's an artist like you. A painter, in addition to doing tattoos. Super intense. I asked her if she wanted to have dinner, and she said no, because she works late, but she kind of went all panicky, and that way people do when they don't want to make you feel bad. Or, I don't know, maybe it was weird because Mom had just come bursting into the shop with leftover puttanesca, and Ginger might have thought I'm some weirdo mama's boy.
Remember the time Mom showed up to your recital with all those cupcakes? God, I thought you were going to lose it. Your face turned so red it was like you were about to have a stroke. Everyone all in tuxedos and Mom holding that plastic cupcake carrier like it was a Little League game. Anyway, there you have it. My crush on a plate. Hang on, that sounds weird now that I own an eating establishment. Let's see.
Chapter 4. The shop was draped with black and orange garlands that Tara had finger-knit out of cheap yarn from the craft store down the street. They looked great, cobwebby and bright, but I thought I was going to have a nostalgia-triggered aneurysm at the reminder of finger-knitting. Marcus and I had drawn life-sized classic monsters of Hollywood covered in tattoos on pieces of poster board, then cut holes out for people's faces so they could snap pics of themselves as Dracula, the Wolfman, the Creature from the Black Lagoon, and the Bride of Frankenstein, who I had dressed up as for the shop party last year and who, Daniel informed me, was actually the Bride of Frankenstein's creature because Frankenstein was the doctor and it was a common misconception, but why should we propagate misinformation? Blah, blah, blah. Then I got him wasted and made him do a drunk history-style speech about Frankenstein that was the greatest thing I'd ever heard. I mean, you try pronouncing progeny when you're intoxicated. People were swanning around, taking pics with the tattooed monsters and posting them on Instagram and Snapchat, which was the real reason we'd set them up. In the last few years, social media had become a great way to drive business to the shop. I'd been completely oblivious about it. Marcus and Lindsay had got me on Twitter, and Morgan had set me up on Instagram. She'd had a lot of followers from her manicure days, even before she started posting piercing pics. It was Tara who really explained everything best, though, and so I'd made her some temporary tattoos in exchange for a crash course that was far more useful than I'd expected. The look on Lindsay's face when she'd come in and seen my tattoos on her kid had also been priceless. Now, I had social media accounts for the shop, as well as personal ones. And I'd started to actually enjoy it, not just as an advertising tool, but as a way to keep in touch with folks I met at tattoo conventions, to see what was new artistically, even to ask and answer questions about methods and tools. There was a part of me that was afraid it could destroy one of the only true apprenticeship-based crafts still out there, but the more I participated, the more it seemed like just a different kind of apprenticeship. I'd found a score to Hocus Pocus on YouTube, and Marcus had used technology to do a mashup between it and some Finnish black metal band, so that was blasting on the stereo. And I had made a secret promise to the Halloween gods that if three people came in tonight dressed as the Sanderson sisters, I would tattoo them with whatever they wanted, for free. This was the third year I'd thrown the shop doors open on Halloween for a party. And every year I drew up a few small Halloween-themed flash designs that we'd tattoo for a flat $50 a pop. They were simple, took almost no concentration, and were a great revenue stream since they could be done in about 10 minutes. People loved the atmosphere of tattoos being done in the shop while the party raged, and it was fun to tattoo in such a frenetic environment. This year I had drawn a crooked witch's hat, a little ghost, a bat flying across a full moon, and a set of plastic vampire fangs. I'd already lost track of how many I'd done. The vampire fangs I'd kind of drawn as a joke, but they were proving to be a popular choice. Now Marcus took over for me at the tattooing station, and I went in back to call Daniel. I hadn't had a Halloween without him since the year after we met. I knew he'd get a kick out of the tattooed monsters photo op and would absolutely want me to give him this year's Halloween tattoos. He had all the others, strategically placed to fit with his other ink. "Happy Halloween," I said in my Nightmare Before Christmas voice. "Happy Halloween, Ginge," Daniel said, and I could hear the smile in his voice. I could also hear other voices in the background. "Ooh, are you with Rex? Put me on speaker," I instructed. I had tried multiple times to get Daniel to record Rex's voice and send me a sample, but he refused to do it for some reason. I'd always had a thing for voices. My mind drifted to Christopher's voice, warm and rich, like hot chocolate laced with whiskey.
"Hi, Ginger," drawled a low, quiet voice. "Nice to meet you."
Damn, he sounded like everything Daniel described. Fire and trees and, well, flannel. Hi, Rex. You have a hot voice. Don't ever stop talking to me. I heard a sharp voice say something, but he was too far away from the phone for me to hear. Daniel muttered, "Everybody does." Who is that?
He's Rex's ex-boyfriend, Will, who showed up out of the blue to try and sleep with Rex. I would have bet $1,000 that Daniel hadn't meant to say that out loud.
He was so used to being honest with me, but with other people, he tended to give the least amount of personal information possible in response to questions.
Well.
Okay, then, I said in a tone that I knew Daniel would read as, "Prepare to call me as soon as you're alone and can explain exactly what's going on." It sucked not knowing the landscape of each other's daily lives. The insignificant details that laid the groundwork for the bigger stuff. I miss not knowing all the little things that set up the context for him to text me one word in all caps and for me to crack up because I knew exactly why that had struck him as funny or shocking or as proof he'd been right. There was such an intimacy in it, one I'd never had with anyone else. I'd tried with my sister over the years, but she was... yeah, no. There had never been any affinity between us, even though there had been a time when I'd held out hope for it. "Have a good night, Dandelion," I said absently into the phone. I immediately bit my lip because I never called him that when anyone else could hear. It was a silly joke from a long time ago. Immediately, I heard the ex-boyfriend laugh about it. "Don't make me kick your ass, pretty boy," Daniel said, and I snorted. That voice, that scrappy, nothing-hurts-me voice, was one I hadn't heard in a while. This ex-boyfriend clearly had Daniel's defenses up, big time. The phone clicked over, and then Rex's voice was right in my ear.
"Ginger,"
he said, and damn, that voice was... yeah.
"I have two beautiful drunk men who are about to fight in my house. If I didn't hate fighting, it would almost be..."
Oh, Daniel's drunk? I hadn't been able to tell on speakerphone. Or else Daniel wasn't as drunk as Rex thought, because I could usually tell. "Then you just need to distract him."
"Yeah, I should,"
Rex said, and I snorted because what he had in mind probably wasn't appropriate in company. "I'm gonna entrust you with a secret, Rex, but you can't abuse it or you will feel the power of my wrath rain down upon you." He made a sound that I took as assent. Daniel is rather helplessly ticklish in the middle of his ribs, on his left side. I'd found this out the hard way for both of us when I tried to tattoo him there. "Huh," Rex said, and I could almost imagine his eyes locking on the spot. Even monosyllabically, he was intense. I really needed to get some more details from Daniel about this guy. But just then... another guy walked in the door and stole my attention. Christopher. In a sea of monsters, movie references, and post-apocalyptic dreams, he looked as fresh and hearty as a fall apple. I got unexpectedly nervous at the sight of him, which hadn't happened to me in forever. Okay, then, use your power only for good, I said.
Okay, thanks. Nice to talk to you.
Yep, same. Back at you. Hope more soon, I garbled.
I hope so, too,
Rex said politely.
Thanks.
I picked my way through the melee toward the door. Marcus was tattooing a guy wearing a dinosaur costume so elaborate that in order to access skin, he'd had to take off pieces of it, which were strewn around the tattoo station. Morgan was arguing loudly with a couple of zombies about the efficacy of newly proposed city zoning laws. A lady dressed like Mia Wallace from Pulp Fiction, complete with needle jabbed into her chest, was trying to take a selfie with the creature from the Black Lagoon, but her arms weren't long enough, so I plucked her phone from her hand and snapped a pic. "Hey," I said to Christopher when I made it to the door.
"Wow."
He indicated the scene and whistled. "Yeah, it's too bad you're seeing the shop for the first time during the party. It'll look super boring by comparison the next time."
"As long as there is a next time, I'm cool with that."
My ears buzzed with excitement. Something about the way he just put things out there really did it for me. It wasn't flirtation, which usually made me roll my eyes and want to get away. It was just genuine interest. I searched for the proper response, realized I'd been standing there staring at him for far too long to seem casual, and forced myself to look away. Smooth, Holtzman. Very smooth. So, no costume?
No. See, I had ambitions. I was gonna do a kind of deranged Sweeney Todd thing, since I'd be behind the counter making food. But then I realized that the implication that people's sandwiches contained human flesh was perhaps not the best business strategy.
He looked sincerely disappointed at the missed opportunity. I was just about to tell him that in his normal clothes, he could have just told everyone he was dressed up as a ridiculously hot urban lumberjack slash construction worker, but fortunately, before I could, he said,
"The work was great, though. People's costumes. There was a very impressive Walking Dead crew, but they got fake blood all over my seats."
Yeah, South Street does it up pretty well, usually. Earlier, I saw a group where one person was Pac-Man, and they were chasing four differently colored ghosts.
You look great.
I hadn't noticed how close together we were standing, so that we could hear each other over the loud voices and the hocus-pocus black metal mashup. Thanks. I already had the hair for it, so I figured. I slid the sunglasses back on that I'd taken off while I was tattooing. I was dressed as Slash from Guns N' Roses, and the sunglasses, the volume of my curly black hair, my nose ring, and the top hat, I looked remarkably like him. I'd had a cigarette hanging off my lip, but I ditched it because it became too hard to resist smoking it. I wanted to do November Rain video Slash because I have the cowboy boots, but I couldn't find affordable chaps. Christopher's eyes slid down my body.
"Yeah, it's a problem," he said absently. "I hope you won't think this is intrusive, but I brought you a sandwich."
He held up a paper bag.
"Have you eaten?"
He had brought me a sandwich? As in, thought of me, made a sandwich, and then brought it to me because he thought I might like it? My brain was stalling out somewhere in the midst of processing the incredibly kind gesture, and I realized I was standing there saying nothing. Only enough candy corn to assure that my blood sugar has transmuted into corn syrup and red dye number whatever. He raised one eyebrow and the bag again. Around him, witches, zombies, every imaginable character from books, television, and movies, and some inanimate objects talked and laughed. In their midst, he looked almost like a joke costume in a movie. Normal guy, with his jeans, boots, and plain navy blue t-shirt, jacket slung over his shoulder. His hair gleamed like a penny. And I was flooded with this intense affection for him, for this person I barely knew. Somehow, without a costume, he looked vulnerable here. I reached for the hand that wasn't holding the bag and tugged them after me. No food on the shop floor. OSHA rules. It was a blatant excuse to get him alone, as we broke the rule every day. We moved slowly through the crowd to the back room, and I closed the door behind us. When I jumped up to sit cross-legged on the table, he sat next to me. "So, what is it?"
"Huh? The sandwich. Oh, right. It's today's Halloween theme special. Grilled Wisconsin cheddar with pesto, avocado, and watercress. I wanted to do orange and black, but black's not very appetizing, and it dyes your teeth, so I went with orange and green."
"Holy shit, that sounds amazing." Christopher's smile was bright and immediate. I pulled out the sandwich, and the smell hit me immediately. I groaned when I tasted it. "That's so damn good. Is Wisconsin cheddar different?"
"Nah, just orange."
I could tell I was missing something.
Naturally, cheddar is white or yellowish because, milk. But Wisconsin cheddar and some others is dyed orange with annatto seed. They've done it since the 19th century. Maybe based on Gloucester cheese? Something about a shift in grazing habits resulting in a lighter cheese and then wanting to distinguish it from New York and Vermont cheddars in the market? I don't remember the details.
Huh. While I ate, we talked about more of the best costumes we'd seen, and I told him about all the ghosts of Halloween parties past. He listened intently, smiling at my enthusiasm. You love Halloween. Yeah, it's the best. Oh, man, you know those haunted walking tours? This one year, Daniel and I followed their route the day before Halloween so we'd know where they went. Then on Halloween night, we got all dressed in white and I gave us this creepy dead face makeup and we crept into the cemetery where the tour would stop. When the tour guide got to the grave in front of us, we jumped out and scared the bejesus out of the tour group. It was awesome. They screamed and, oh man. Only right after, this figure jumps out and runs straight at us, wearing like a rotted potato sack with this long bloody hair all matted, and we screamed and ran away. I guess that guy was part of the actual tour and he was supposed to have jumped out and scared them for Halloween, but we totally ruined it. He laughed. So, your mom seemed nice the other day.
She is. She still treats me like I'm 16 sometimes, but I guess I can't blame her.
I snorted. Sure you can.
To be fair, until the last year, I was kind of all over the place.
Where were you?
After college, I drove around the country as a roadie for my friend's band. Not as glamorous as it sounds, by the way.
It really doesn't sound glamorous at all.
He grinned. Yeah, well, then I taught English in Croatia for a year. Then I was a bike messenger in Baltimore and lived with a friend there. Then I came back to Philly and bartended for a couple of years while I took business classes online. I thought about opening a bar where people played board games, but after seeing what went into owning a bar, I gave the idea to my friends and went to culinary school instead.
You went to culinary school? Wait, is that why you knew that thing about orange cheese? Jesus, I can't even make minute rice.
Well, rice should take a lot longer than a minute, so it's no wonder.
No offense or anything, but I wouldn't think you'd need to go to culinary school to make sandwiches. Not that this wasn't a great sandwich, but,
oh, you don't need to. I didn't even think of opening the shop when it started. I just love to cook. I didn't exactly graduate. I'm still a few classes short, but I decided I could live without more sauces in my life. But it definitely helped when I applied for the loan to open Melt.
I nodded, stomach tightening at the word loan.
It wasn't just that I moved around a lot, though.
He continued, and he looked down, rubbing at a scratch in the table.
I was kind of scattered, you know? Man, she'd worry a lot.
Scattered how?
Like impulsive. If someone was taking off somewhere, I'd go with them. A friend of mine decided to do a 3-month bike trip through Canada, and I just left with him in the middle of the night. And, I was doing a lot of drugs, just kind of, I don't know, looking for something.
His expression was serious, and he wouldn't look at me. What were you looking for?
He shrugged and fidgeted. I was trying to understand things,
he said slowly.
Things have been hard for my brother, and I was trying to understand.
He shook his head.
All my life, I was pretty good at everything. Pretty good at everything, but not great at anything. Not obsessed with anything, not driven to any one thing. And when I finished college, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I did so many different jobs, dated all these different people, because I was looking for that one thing that I just felt more for.
He shrugged, and I got the sense there was a lot he hadn't said. But he clearly was done talking about it.
What about you?
He asked. This is exactly what I always wanted to do.
So, who's the dude?
Dude? What dude? Morgan looked at me over the top of her glasses. I was finishing a totally nice tattoo of totally nice flowers on a totally nice guy. But it was a pretty mindless job. Whenever clients came in, I always reminded myself that I didn't know their stories. That those extremely generic, middle-of-the-road flowers were likely very personal to the person getting them tattooed. Even if they weren't, I didn't have some kind of campaign against meaninglessness or anything. The tattoos were art. They didn't have to be meaningful, necessarily, any more than you had to have a reason better than I like it for hanging a piece of art in your living room. Besides, half the time we didn't even consciously process why we cared about things, did we? Sometimes we found ourselves strongly drawn to something for reasons that seemed mysterious. Nothing wrong with that, either. But I'd be lying if I said that I didn't believe just the tiniest bit in a kind of tattoo blood magic. That transmutation of flesh and ink that renders the aesthetic permanent. I felt it. When my machine bit into flesh, my needle whispered secrets in its hushed buzz. It felt sacred to me, the communion of art that changed a body forever. The flower guy murmured his approval into the mirror, and I wrapped up his tattoo and started cleaning up my station. He was certainly vibing you pretty hard, whoever he was. I should have known Morgan wouldn't let it go. He works at Melt. He brought me a sandwich. We've chatted a few times, that's all.
Who have you chatted with?
Marcus walked the client he'd just finished to the door, then dropped into my now empty chair.
Dude who was in here last night to see Miss Ginger.
Oh, yeah, I wondered who that guy was. Handsome. I rolled my eyes. They were never going to let it go. I dumped my station's debris in the waste bin and sighed, throwing myself onto the battered leather couch along the wall. Fine. His name's Christopher, and I've been going to his sandwich shop to see him like a pathetic loser. And last night he brought me a sandwich, and it's like the nicest thing any random has ever done for me.
What? No way. How about the time that girl gave you backstage passes to Lady Gaga?
Morgan chimed in. Okay, point of clarification. It's the nicest thing any random has done for me because I'm me, as opposed to because I gave them a tattoo they liked.
Why does that make you a pathetic loser?
Marcus asked. No, I know, I said.
The question stands.
Oh. Because, whatever, he has a functional relationship with his mother. He eats balanced, healthy meals.
Well, obviously that's stupid.
What's the real reason? Morgan flicked her nails at me.
I'm being totally serious.
I wasn't, really. But aside from Marcus himself, who I'd dated for a year a very long time ago, and a woman named Bria, who left the city after we broke up, not that her leaving was really my fault, I'd never dated anyone longer than a month. And even that was usually too long. So it was easier to just avoid it, especially when I turned out to not like very many people much anyway. It was easier to be on my own than to make the kind of compromises that nearly everyone I'd ever dated had encouraged me to make. Sometimes that encouragement was clear. If you're always working, I'll never get to see you, so just take a night off. Or, I like your tattoos, fine, but it's a pretty nice restaurant, so. Sometimes it wasn't explicit. It was just me. Me seeing the things someone wished were different about me and expending a lot of energy not to capitulate to what they wanted me to be. The chances of Christopher being the exception to all the rules I'd built up over the years seemed mathematically unlikely, so given that it wasn't going to turn into anything but me being hot for a guy I had no chance of a successful relationship with, hanging out at his shop made me, by definition, both pathetic and a loser. So there.
Christopher.
Jay.
Oh, yeah, I'm very familiar with that look. She gave it to me once when she caught me sneaking into the house junior year, drunk, after a Battle of the Bands thing, and it made me feel so guilty I just confessed to everything on the spot. I get why you don't want her to come visit. Or Dad. But are you sure I can't come? I know I don't understand how you feel. I know it's not the same for me. But I still wish you'd talk to me, man. I'm not a little kid anymore. Maybe I could help. Casper called me. Did you know? After he found you, but before they'd told Mom and Dad where you were. He really cares about you, bro. I know that's not the point. I'm just saying, if you want to go back there, you wouldn't have to be alone if you didn't want to be. I know, you like to be alone. It's just, do you, or do you just feel guilty because you think you're a burden on people? Because someone who really loves you wouldn't feel that way, you know?
I'm not saying it has to be Casper, but I don't know what I'm saying. I just thought you should know he cares. Anyway, a question for you, big bro. At what point do you either have to make a move on someone or resign yourself to just being friends? I've been kind of holding on, waiting to see if Ginger would give me some kind of sign she's into me. Or even a sign she's not. I don't really know where I stand. She's not flirtatious, and the first times we met, I thought maybe she wasn't into dudes, so I had no chance. But now, I think she's just not flirtatious in general, because I swear we have chemistry. At least, I don't think it's just me. And she does seem glad to see me, but also whenever she sees me, she gets coffee and food, so maybe it's just one of those, what do you call them, responses, like a dog and a bell? Or is it a rat and food pellets? A rat and a bell? You know what I mean. I don't know. It's like every time I'm around her, I feel like I've known her forever, but also she always surprises me. Like, she feels comfortable and right, somehow, even though she's really different than me. God, I sound like such an idiot. Good thing you're such an antisocial loner. At least I know you're not in there telling everyone else what a dork your brother is. Advice, please. Love you, bro. You'll tell me if you need anything, right? I could send it. And I know I'm a broken record here, but if you want to talk, see.
Chapter 5. It's so hard to find good help these days. I moaned in a terrible old Hollywood accent and collapsed onto the couch, head hanging upside down over the side, arm trailing dramatically on the floor, blue and black flannel trailing dramatically and unintentionally over my face. Marcus fanned me idly with a back issue of Inked magazine.
Help with what?
Christopher stood above me, holding another paper bag from the shop. I pushed the flannel off my face and pulled myself right side up. He was windblown, red hair disordered and scarf uneven. His orange-blonde stubble was longer than I'd seen it before, and he looked a little tired, but that made sense considering he opened the shop at 7 a.m. Still, tired or not, he looked ridiculously hot, and I had a clear picture of what I wanted to do to him. Push him up against the counter and kiss him until he turned the tables on me. Hi.
Hey,
he said.
I hope it's okay I dropped by.
This was the third night in a row that Christopher had come by around 8:30 and brought food from his shop. The first time had been a few nights after Halloween, and he'd brought me a pastrami sandwich with whole grain mustard and Swiss cheese. He stayed for about an hour, chatting with Morgan and Marcus and generally making a good impression. When he'd left, I'd felt this drop in the pit of my stomach, like the air leaving a balloon. While he'd been casually hanging out, everything had felt sparkly and exciting. As he'd walked out the door, Marcus had leaned close and said,
"If you think it's doomed to fail with that guy, and you aren't even gonna try, then you are a total idiot."
The thing was, I knew he was right. But I hardly had enough time to make everything in my life work as it was. Add a relationship into the mix, and yeah, no way. Even painting, which I loved, had been on the back burner the last couple of years as I made the shop into what I wanted it to be. Agreeing to do Malik's show had been aspirational. I'd known it would force me to take time for the work, which I wanted to do anyway. That, and Malik had dared me. Well, goaded. A neat little praise sandwich between slices of goading. "You haven't shown me anything new in a fucking year, Ginger. You're so damn talented. I can't stand to see you not make time for your painting. Or, I don't know, maybe you're all about the quick one and done now. More interested in making bank than making art." I'd committed to the show, even though I'd known Malik was goading me. Because he was right. I wanted the shop to succeed. And to me, success was about doing the best work we possibly could in the most ethical way we possibly could for the greatest number of awesome people we possibly could. But a big part of that was money. I'd taken on a huge financial burden, and even though I loved being in charge of the shop, building it into my ideal, the money part of being the boss fucking sucked.
I'd had to learn by doing, and I'd made a lot of mistakes. I'd gotten better over the last year or so, but it always felt like a slog, since the money side of things wasn't where my passion lay. I was determined for it to be a success, though, because it was my hope, and now Marcus's, Morgan's, Lindsay, and Tara's. And also because I'd be goddamned if I didn't prove everyone who doubted me wrong. My parents, who thought tattooing was trashy and worthless and an embarrassment. The people who gave me shit when I was an apprentice, insinuating that Jonathan was only giving me a shot because he wanted to sleep with me, or that clients wouldn't take me seriously. And everyone who asked to speak to my boss, even after I'd told them I was the owner of the shop. I wanted every single one of them to eat shit. And I also had 100 ideas for ways to improve small change, things we could do as a shop to connect with others in the industry and to help out our neighborhood. But for that to happen, small change very much needed to be in the black. Recently, that had meant working nearly every day, from open to close, and taking care of all the other shop business any moment I could spare. And it was working, even if I was tired all the time, and woke up at least once a week from anxiety dreams where the shop burned down or flooded, or once was whisked away in a tornado and landed in Northern Liberties on top of that retro chic bowling alley, 2 feet in striped socks and bowling shoes sticking out from underneath it, then shriveling to nothing. So, yeah, my relationship? If it meant taking time away from all the things I've been working my ass off for, then it was very much not on my immediate to-do list. Last night had been the second night Christopher had come in, and he'd brought sandwiches for Morgan and Marcus, too, which was the kiss of death, because now they'd tell him anything. He'd bonded with Marcus over some band they both liked and earned major points with Morgan because he complimented her manicure. I'd gone to the bathroom and come back to hear Morgan telling Christopher I lived in the apartment upstairs. Oi! Social foul, using sandwiches as conversational lubricant to fast-track information gathering, I'd said. Now Marcus looked up from fanning me and said, It's great you drop by. Yeah, great, Morgan echoed, shooting me a sharp look. Isn't it great, Ginger? Yeah, it's great, I muttered. It was my friends I was irritated with, but Christopher's face, usually open and sunny, clouded over. And guilt flooded me, because I hadn't meant it to be directed toward him at all. Shit, sorry, I said. That was an asshole thing to say. I totally didn't mean it like that. It is great, really. I'm glad you're here. He scrubbed a hand over his jaw and tugged on his scarf. Maybe I'll just leave these for you guys. He put the bag on the counter. We can't find another tattooer, I explained. Huh? He turned toward me. That's the help we can't find. And why I'm in a shitty mood that makes me say mean things to nice people. Who brings sandwiches? We've gone through a gazillion portfolios, and there's no one that's right for the shop. And we're swamped. So, I'm sorry. Stay, really. A small smile touched his lips. I could have sworn he looked more tired than usual. Weary. But he grabbed a bag and handed out sandwiches, then sat on the couch next to me. So what would make someone a good fit? What's wrong with all the people you've seen? I loved the way he seemed interested in everything. Marcus groaned. Well, on the artistic side, it's about getting someone who's good at the right things. Like Ginger's magic at black and gray, especially detailed work, realism, portraits, pinups. Not that she's not great at other stuff, too, but that's where she really shines. I like black and gray, but I specialize in old school stuff. Imagine 1940s or 50s style tattoos and traditional Japanese images. It's bold color and intricate lines. So what we're missing is someone who's really good with bright and subtle color work, and someone who does what you'd think of as more cartoonish work. New school style, exaggerated form, super saturated color, color work with no outlines, all that kind of thing. Then it'd help if they weren't the scum of the earth. Morgan sat around a mouthful of tuna melt. Like this one's douchebag X. Great tattoo artist, great with color work. Less great at the whole not being a bag of dicks thing. Your ex? I nodded. For better or for worse, tattooing is a small and incestuous world, especially in Philly. It's these fucking dudes, Morgan said, then quickly looked at Christopher. Sorry, but it's a sad truth.
I get it, Christopher said with a shrug. Or, I mean, I probably don't get it, but I have heard tell that it's an issue.
It's a whole fucking volume, Morgan said. The thing is, we can't afford to hold out for the perfect person forever because we've gotten slammed lately, I explained. We can't keep up, and I'm playing the evil boss, keeping these lovelies away from their homes and families and, like, dogs and stuff. I cringed as I looked at Morgan and Marcus. Sorry, 1,000 times, sorry. It seemed like all I did recently was apologize to them for this. But the idea of letting the wrong person into the shop I'd worked so hard to build filled me with panic.
We want the right person too, Boo, said Morgan, and Marcus nodded. Yeah, it's our home too.
We got written up in Philly Mag, Morgan told Christopher. Most queer-friendly shop in the city, only female-owned shop in the city, which, awesome, but now,
you know, Biz, she is a boomin'.
That's awesome. The only female-owned shop? I would never have guessed that. We all smiled grimly. From the outside, the tattoo business seemed to have changed a lot in the last decade. It was more and more common to see tattoos on women, so people imagined that translated into the business itself. In fact, in a game like tattooing, where you needed to really know someone for them to be willing to teach you, where an apprenticeship lasted years, and then it took years to establish yourself in the business, the industry ran 10 or 15 years behind the street trends, at least. And no matter how much things changed at the level of female interest in tattooing, the number of talented artists drummed out of the business by macho posturing, unwanted sexual behavior, and abuse, not to mention good old-fashioned misogyny, was staggering. I thought of them, often. The ghost crew of talented women who were the casualties of that toxic attitude. I thought of how different the industry could be, how much better, if they had a place in it. I took a huge bite of my sandwich and sank back into the couch, chewing with my eyes closed. A BLT. Delicious, like they all were. I couldn't believe there were people alive who hadn't wanted these sandwiches. Been working really hard on her paintings for a show coming up.
Oh my God, I said, jerking upright. Did I just fall asleep sitting up with a sandwich in my mouth?
The crumbs on my chest and the leaf of lettuce resting limply on my collarbone pointed to yes.
Jesus.
I risked a glance up at Christopher. But his expression was fond? I really hoped I didn't have mayonnaise on my face. I hauled myself up, suddenly feeling overwhelmed. It happens sometimes. The world just felt too loud, too bright, too close. But especially at the end of a long day when I was tired anyway. And I didn't want Christopher to see me like that, because for all I knew that nothing could happen between us, I still wanted him to think better of me than passed out like a drunk old man in a barco lounger with a sandwich hanging out of my open mouth.
Sorry, y'all. Just so beat.
Do you actually mind if we close up early? I don't think we're going to get any more walk-ins tonight.
Sounds good, Marcus said.
Morgan nodded and started gathering her stuff. Thank you, I said to Christopher. It sounded strained and awkward. But he just smiled at me and picked something out of my hair.
Tomato,
he said with a faint smile. I closed my eyes and shook my head.
Attractive, Holtzman.
But then he cupped my cheek, and the smile was gone. In its place was heat. He was looking at me, really looking at me. And that heat burned through me like we were the only two people in the room. His golden eyes smoldered, and there was a humming in my ears.